Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast. So hi, Pod. We are back from our spring break, and we're excited to get into this topic. So over the course of this season, we've been highlighting the different ways that our children find us. We discussed donor egg, and today we're discussing donor embryo. And we have a special guest host, a friend to the show, Abby. And I think I shared over one of the last two seasons that I considered every possible path to getting my second child. And at one point, I considered embryo donation. Abby was the person that I went to get the down low on all of the details, all of the ins and outs, what I could expect financially, what I can expect from a clinical perspective on the embryo donation side.
So Abby, welcome to the show. She is an SMC and founder of Peaceful Parent Sleep Coaching. Abby, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi. I am a proud SMC of two kids, Calliope, who's 10, and Amelie, who is 7. We left New York 3.5 years ago and live in Mexico. And I now have a partner, a domestic partner that for the last 2 years, but I still very much identify with being an SMC because that was the first 8.5 years of motherhood for me.
Once an SMC, always an SMC.
Yes, yes. Thank you for joining us today, Abby. So let's start from the beginning with what is embryo donation?
So I used IVF to create each of my children. I did an IVF round for each of them. And I had 4 embryos left over from those 2 rounds of IVF. And they were frozen. And then at some point along the way, a friend of mine through another friend was interested in becoming a parent through frozen embryos. She didn't want to do IVF, and our mutual friend connected us. And now she is the mother of a beautiful little boy who is from one of my embryos.
Oh, that's awesome. So when you decided to donate your remaining embryos, did you discuss this with your family first? And were your kids old enough to understand the discussion? And what was their reaction?
Oh, that is such a good question. I don't think I discussed it with them ahead of time. When I was thinking about it, they were still pretty little. So he's 4 now and my oldest is 10. So probably when we were thinking about it, she was only 5 and Amelie would have been a baby. So no, it didn't occur to me actually to talk to them about it.
So do they know donor siblings from the sperm donor?
We have never met any of their donor half siblings. I only recently found out about their donor half siblings on Facebook, maybe 2 summers ago. And I showed them pictures and they were intrigued. Well, my oldest was intrigued and we were hoping to meet one of them last summer, but then it didn't work out because they were sick when we were in New York. Yeah. So they don't have any other donor sibling experience.
It's always interesting, right? Because I think as SMCs, we're so used to coming at it from the recipient perspective, right? So I use the sperm donor. When I think of donor sibling relationships, I think of that third person, right? And it's just like, yeah, so this is how my kids are going to interact with this third person. This is how they're going to interact with their donor siblings, right? So it's something, it's an entity that's external to me. But now I am the donor, right? So now the shoe is on the other foot. Like, how will donor conceived children receive me? What will their expectations of me be? What do I envision the relationship of the other donor conceived child to be with my children, right? So I think that there is this added level of, I need to think about that when I am now the donor. For some of us, it is a new kind of shift in thinking.
Yeah. And I'll say about that, when I was thinking about embryo donation, I was really thinking about my relationship to the child. And then as soon as he was born, and we do have a relationship with him, my kids know him, it became clear very quickly that, oh, this is not about me. This is about the kids and their relationship to each other. And he's only four. So who knows, maybe when he's an adult, he'll want to have more of a relationship with me, or he'll have questions specifically for me. But right now it really feels like it's about the kids, which I didn't anticipate.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. So let's talk about cost. I think one of the reasons I thought it was important to pull this episode together is because we have in the past, and we're starting to see it in our space more and more, that SMC is starting to be a bit more equal opportunity, that we will get these tiny sparks of clashes between expectations of people looking to receive donor embryos and people looking to donate embryos. And we've seen a slight uptick in clashes with expectations. So people will be like, oh my gosh, they wanted my money. And it's just like, huh? Oh, she wanted to sell me her embryos. And it's just like, oh no. And I think when I see that happen, I internally cringe, because these are, there's emotions at play, right? And there's money at play. So it is a high stakes kind of conversation, whereas you could potentially turn off people that are well-intentioned on both sides because there is that level of not fully understanding what to expect. So can we talk a little bit about what to expect on a monetary side and on a legal and social work, psychological kind of side? So those three areas.
Yeah. So I was never in that particular situation, but I would say, so with my recipient, her name's Johanna, she and I have a shared background in that we both worked at the same Quaker summer camp 100 years ago. And we have a very close mutual friend from that. But we also have a shared background of Quaker values and many friends. So even though we didn't keep in touch over two or three decades, we have a lot in common. So I'm very grateful that there was some unspoken expectations, maybe. But I feel like for me as a donor, if somebody asked me for money, I'd be taken aback, because if you think about the cost of going through IVF to create embryos, not just financial, but physical and emotional, it is a huge burden. And look, I feel so grateful that I was able to have that experience and to create my children, but I'm guessing each round of IVF was around $20,000. Mm-hmm. With my first round, I ended up hospitalized for 2 days as a result of the fertility treatments. Emotionally, it was so hard. So to me, I'm offering a gift, no strings attached, basically. Like, right. I wanted to have a relationship with the child, but that was it. But if someone said to me, if they asked me for money on top of that, I think that would be, frankly, a big turnoff.
So when I was considering becoming a recipient, and when I reached out to Abby, I asked Abby specific questions like, what should I expect to pay out of pocket? And I think that there are some things that you do pay out of pocket, because there are legal fees involved in the transfer of embryos. There's transportation fees, there's storage fees, there are testing fees that are involved, there are fees for the fertility clinic based on what their requirements are. And so that's how I broke it down in my head. And I think that these go unspoken when you have an altruistic donor and someone who is hoping to be a recipient. And so you have this conversation, you're like, I have these extra embryos, I want to donate them to you. And people hear donation, they think it's 100% free. And you're not exactly paying for the embryo, but you're paying for everything around that embryo. So we have to talk to a lawyer. Each party should have a lawyer, right? And who pays for that? It's the person who is hoping to receive that donation, right? Mm-hmm. From the point where you decide, okay, this is my person as a donor, then it is the recipient who's, okay, so I'm going to take over storage. I'm going to transport the embryos to my fertility clinic. So there is a lot that's involved from the point where you decide I'm going to accept these embryos to the point where you get to transferring that embryo into your uterus. And I think that's the part that's the gray area that people are not fully prepared for.
Yeah. So for us, luckily, Johanna graciously offered to pay for everything. So I believe the attorney was $750 for each of us, and she paid for both of those. She didn't pay the storage fees because I had four embryos and we only shipped two at a time, but she paid for the transportation of the embryos. And when she was successful on her first attempt, she then paid to ship the remaining embryo back to me. She would have paid for a counseling session, but the counselor I had seen was actually, I was a healthcare provider for her son. And so she graciously donated the session. I don't even remember if that was required, but many clinics would require a counseling session. So I would expect that the recipient would pay for that. But I think when you consider the cost of basically, it's just a frozen embryo transfer. I don't remember, but I'm going to guess that's under $5,000 exactly. It's so much cheaper than doing a full IVF cycle.
It is, yes. So please let me know if this is a sensitive question, but how did you navigate any feelings you might have had around a child that is not yours, but is you share genetics with, potentially being raised by another adult? How was that for you?
Yeah. So I was nervous about how I would feel having this full genetic sibling. And so because the embryos had been PGS tested ahead of time, I requested Johanna, would she be comfortable with trying the male embryos first? Because I have two girls. And she said yes. And so I imagine that would make it a little bit easier for me than if it was a little girl.
Now, why was that?
Oh, that's interesting. Why did you think that?
I just imagined that the baby would feel a little bit more distant to me because I had never had the experience of parenting a son. So I was really nervous. She very graciously offered to let us come visit while she was still in the hospital. So the baby was 24 hours old. Calliope and I made the drive up. She was upstate a few hours away. And it was such a relief to me when I met him. Like, this baby is so beautiful and it is not my baby. This is somebody else's baby. So that was a huge relief. I feel towards him like I do towards my nephews. I love him automatically and instinctively, but I don't feel any instinct to parent him. And the older he gets, the less I feel that.
So while Johanna was pregnant, were you processing your feelings all along the way? Did you do some self-work to get to that point?
I think I did a lot of it ahead of time. I had always had the plan to donate embryos because I felt super lucky that I had been so successful with IVF. But yeah, I think I was thinking about it and imagining it while she was pregnant. I felt very invested in her pregnancy succeeding, and it was really fun to get to see her while she was pregnant. But it ended up being a lot easier than I feared. Yeah, once I met him, it was like, this is so great. I'm so happy we did this. She's so happy. He's so beautiful. Like, it felt much easier than I expected.
Nice. Yeah, it is so sweet to want to pay it forward. Like, I don't have anything that I can donate, but I have been donating blood because I think once you're in the path of thinking of it as a tissue donation and you think like, how can I pay this forward at a time where I'm able to? And it's so I've been starting this year, I've donated twice, and they keep every time I get the emails, I respond because I'm starting to get emotional because it's such a gift when you're unable to create that thing that you so desperately want or need in the case of blood, and to have someone graciously give you that gift is just wow. So you talked a little bit about meeting little guy for the first time. Can you talk more about what the relationship is like? Is it working as you envisioned, or has that changed and evolved over time?
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to make one comment on what you just said about the gift, that I think maybe a thing people don't realize is that when you're giving this gift, you're not only giving it to the other person, you're giving it to yourself. It's a gift to me to get to see this little boy growing up. Mm-hmm. So I feel really grateful for the experience also.
With mom and little guy, is it what you envision? Is it what you anticipated going into this?
Yeah. So I'll call him Sean, not his real name. I hoped that we would get to see him more often. When the transfer took place, Johanna was living in Seattle and I was in Brooklyn. And then I chose to move my family to Mexico. She moved to upstate New York. So we actually could have seen each other more, but I was the one that moved away. And then we had COVID. So we didn't go back to the States one summer. But last summer, we spent a long weekend with them. And I think we will this summer as well. So that's really lovely. It's honestly so much easier than I would have anticipated. I think one thing that's really interesting about his relationship with my kids is they're significantly older. He's 4 and they're 7 and 10. And so around the time that he was born, Calliope said, "Oh, he's my brother." And I was really taken aback by that. I would have not have used those words. I don't really like using brother and sister for donor half siblings, even then. And obviously donor sibling, like they are full siblings, but for me personally, I think children who are raised together in the same home are brother and sister or siblings. But I realize I don't get to define that. This is theirs. And he's going to grow up with these older bio siblings who are so much ahead of him developmentally that they're going to be calling the shots in terms of what they call him. And of course he doesn't have to use those words, but I didn't really anticipate that. And I think recently my younger daughter, she told my partner, she said, you're not my donor. So you're not my real dad. And she just put that together for the first time as well. So around the same age as Calliope did. And so I think it's, oh, wow, like these kids get to decide how they define things. I don't really think they refer to him as their brother. Calliope just realized, like she put it together.
Okay,
like,
got it.
Oh, he's my brother. And probably if they were together with him, they might tell someone else, this is my brother. But I think it's more like they're showing off. Then they think of him as a full sibling in the way that they think of each other. I don't know how he refers to me. He is still fairly little, just turned 4. So I'm not sure. We originally talked about calling them super cousins. I liked the idea of making up our own label, but the kids haven't really latched onto that. So I probably usually, I don't have a good label, something like their donor sibling, but I recognize that's not totally clear because a lot of people refer to donor half siblings as donor siblings. So I think we're still navigating that.
Abby, how would you want Sean to refer to you in an ideal world? How would you want him to refer to you?
I honestly don't care if he wants to call me an auntie or the donor or a friend. It doesn't matter to me. I think what matters to me at this point is really like honoring his relationship with my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think so much of this is uncharted territory. It is both exciting and terrifying at the same time, because we are at the point where we're making decisions for these children who will be future adults. And at some point we become sidelined by the decisions that they make for their lives and have to be okay with whatever they decide to do. And so it is almost an evolution of the adults in this situation, as well as for the kids, as they become adept at defining boundaries and titles and names and relationships for themselves. So I think it is fascinating.
I think the biggest thing for me is just make sure that you're really on the same page emotionally with the other adult in the potential agreement. I think if your values are aligned, then hopefully you can work out all of them. Bring up a really important point, which is I feel super protective of these embryos. Mm-hmm. Because right now, while they're frozen, they're still my children.
Yeah. And I will say, Abby, that I do love the thought process of once these kids make their way into the world, then it stops being about the adults, really. And it starts to be about the kids. And how do you create that environment for the kids to foster whatever relationship they're going to have? And so I thank you for your candor. I thank you for, and I know it's got to be like emotional to go back there and bring it back forward and then think about sidelining for the kids. And so I do appreciate you coming here today and joining us in this conversation. Before we let you go, we wanted to know a little bit more about Peaceful Parent Sleep Coaching. So could you tell us a little bit more about your business and how you are partnering with SMC families and coupled families to get them through a critical moment in their parenting, which is sleep training, sleep coaching their kids?
Yeah, thank you. First, thank you for inviting me onto the show. It's a real honor. Yeah, so my background, I was a neonatal ICU nurse for a couple of years and then a pediatric nurse practitioner in Brooklyn for 13 years. And then when I moved to Mexico, they don't have nurse practitioners here. And I thought back to my experience of needing to sleep train my own kids and how incredibly stressful that was, especially with my oldest. It was really scary. But then when I did it, it ended up being this really empowering experience because they were so much happier when they were getting the sleep that they need. So that kind of inspired me to get certified 3 years ago as a sleep consultant. And so now, yeah, I work with families of young children, both single parents and coupled, to help them get their kids sleeping through the night, because I truly believe that families are so much happier when they're getting the sleep that they need. I love working with SMCs. I'm generally very close communication with them while they're going through the process. I'm actually, one family I'm working with right now is an SMC, and her daughter needed to go to the hospital briefly. And I was able to be there with her, providing emotional support, which was really, I hope it was helpful for her. I think so. It was also really nice for me because I could imagine how stressful that would be and what it was like, even as a healthcare provider, when my kids were sick, especially my oldest when she was a baby, how stressful it was. So it's really special for me to get to work with families in this really vulnerable time in their lives and hopefully help them make their lives even better.
Well, thank you, Abby. We appreciate you.
Full Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.